This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Christ Impulse and the Development of Ego Consciousness. Lecture 3 is entitled The Entrance of the Christ Being into the Evolution of Humanity. In each of the Gospels, light is thrown on the great mystery of Golgotha from one particular aspect. I have drawn your attention to the fact that the secret of Golgotha, the secret of Christ Jesus, is presented by the Gospel of St. Mark from the aspect of the great cosmological connections, while that of St. Matthew shows how this secret was developed out of one special people, the ancient Hebrews. We have seen how they had to develop gradually from the time of Abraham through generation after generation, so as to bring forth later as their flower the human being in whom could be contained the individuality of Zarathustra or Zoroaster. We have seen how all the qualities peculiar to the ancient Hebrew people, qualities that had to become increasingly intensified in the course of their descent from one generation to the next, were based entirely on the principle of physical heredity. We were thus able to describe how the character of the mission of the ancient Hebrews differed from that of others, in that it had to inherit certain qualities that could be attained only through physical heredity. Qualities that had gained in intensity from the oldest generations of the time of Abraham down to Jesus. The Gospel of St. Matthew contains many other secrets, as indeed do all the Gospels, although in the course of this winter we shall disclose a few aspects and perspective glimpses into the Gospels, they can at most only stimulate the understanding. To understand the Gospels completely, a continual spiritual work is necessary. Today, light shall be thrown from one particular side on the Gospel of St. Matthew. It will show how the lessons to be drawn from this Gospel can be usefully applied by those who now stand within the anthroposophical spiritual stream. If we look back at much of what we have learned as the years have passed, we shall see that the development of humanity, as described by spiritual science, passes through various crises. It reaches an important point, then continues for a while along a more level road, then comes to another important point, and so on. We have often emphasized that at a most important point in the development of humanity on earth was reached when the Christ impulse was given it at the beginning of our era. When we look back beyond the Atlantean, into the Lemurian age, we come to that time when the first rudiment of the human ego was implanted in man. Words must be used accurately to come to an understanding of such an event. We must, for instance, make a clear distinction between the statement that in the Lemurian epoch, quote, the first rudiments of the ego were implanted in the human being, unquote, and, quote, the period or age in which humanity became conscious of this ego began at the time of the mystery of Golgotha, unquote. There is a great difference between having the ego only in rudiment as something working in man and the knowledge that one possesses it. A sharp distinction must be made between these things, otherwise it is impossible to understand the true laws of evolution. We know that the implantation of the ego in man is part of the collective development of the earth. The earth acquired its present form only after passing through the Saturn, Sun, and Moon ages. On Saturn, the seed of the physical body was planted, on the Sun that of the etheric body, on the Moon the astral body, and on Earth, during the Lemurian epoch, the seed of the ego was introduced into the development of the earth. Now, something we have always called the Luciferic influence appeared also in the Lemurian epoch. At that time, man was endowed with a germinal ego, which, in the course of the subsequent earth periods, was destined to attain increasing perfection. At the same time, the Luciferic influence was introduced into his astral body. As a result, the whole nature of man was altered by this influence, even the forces and elements of his etheric and physical bodies. Thus, in the Lemurian epoch, man became an entirely different being from what he would have been had there been no Luciferic influence. We see him altered in two respects. we see him becoming an ego being, and we see him becoming a being in whom the Luciferic principle is contained. Even if the Luciferic principle had not been introduced, the ego influence would still have been implanted in him. Now, what took place in the human being as a result of the Luciferic influence having made itself felt in the Lemurian epoch? When such a circumstance is described from one aspect or another, I beg you not to consider that to be all that can be said on the subject, because it may well be only one point of view, selected for the moment. Over the years, a great deal has been said about what the Luciferic influence brought about in the evolution of man. We cannot repeat it all now, but it is all part of the same picture. Today we will select one point of view that describes one aspect. As a result of the Luciferic influence, man reached a certain point in evolution earlier than was intended, earlier than the wise guidance of the world had predestined for him. The Luciferic influence caused him to descend more deeply into the three principles, the astral, etheric, and physical bodies, that came over from the former embodiments of the earth, and he has become more entangled in them than would have been the case if no such influence had prevailed. Man, with his ego, would have remained nearer to the spiritual worlds. He would have continued for a longer time to feel himself, through his ego, a member of the spiritual world, if the Luciferic influence had not caused his ego to descend more deeply into the three principles. We may say that as a result of the Luciferic influence, man descended deeper into the earth in the Lemurian epoch. We can indicate the time as the middle of the Atlantean epoch, when he would have descended thus far to the earth or into physical matter had there been no Luciferic influence. Man would have been obliged to wait until Atlantean times for his descent to earth, if no Luciferic influence had occurred, but its appearance caused him to descend earlier. He was thus enabled, through this influence, to become a free being, able to act in accordance with his own impulses. Otherwise he would have remained entirely dependent upon the spiritual world until the middle of the Atlantean epoch, nor would he have been able before then to distinguish between good and evil, nor to act from his own impulses. He would only have been able to act from psychic influences, that is to say, from forces implanted in his soul by divine spiritual beings. The Luciferic beings made it possible for him to begin at an earlier stage to decide between good and evil, not simply to allow himself to be guided by the laws of the divine spiritual world order, but to decide for himself, thereby creating a kind of law and order for himself. This fact is expressed in a profound way in the description of the fall, which represents, in a wonderful imaginative picture, what I have just stated. The Old Testament describes this by saying that divine spiritual beings implanted a living soul in man. Now, if this living soul had merely remained as it was, man would have had to wait until later, until the divine spiritual beings had brought the living soul, or the yet undeveloped ego, to the degree of maturity able to make distinctions. Now, however, the Luciferic influences arrived, which are represented in the Bible as the serpent. Through these, man became able to distinguish between good and evil, instead of following merely instinctively the inpourings from Jehovah or the Elohim. From a being who until that time had been guided and led by divine spiritual beings, man thus became a being able to make his own decisions. The Bible clearly shows that self-decision was brought to man by the serpent, or in other words, by Luciferic beings. We then hear the words ring forth, words spoken from the side of the gods. Man has become as one of us. Or, if we wish to put it in plainer words, man has acquired something through the Luciferic influence that has until now been reserved for the gods. It was given to the gods to decide between good and evil, and the beings dependent upon them had no such decisions to make. As a result of the Luciferic influence, man became a being capable of making distinctions. That is, he became a being who developed divine qualities within him prematurely. In this way, and through this influence, something entered human nature that would otherwise have been withheld from his evolution until the middle of the Atlantean epoch. As you can well imagine, man would have been quite different if this descent into matter had not taken place until then. His soul would have been more mature for the descent, and he would have descended into matter as a better, a riper man. He would have brought quite different qualities into his physical, etheric, and astral bodies, and he would have possessed a different power of deciding between good and evil. Because man was able, from the Lemurian epoch to the middle of the Atlantean epoch, to decide between good and evil, he made himself worse than he would otherwise have been, and thereby entered a state of lesser perfection. He would have spent all the intervening time in a much more spiritual way, but as it was, he passed through it more materialistically. The effect was that if he had not received what the gods had intended him to have in the middle of the Atlantean epoch, he would have fallen utterly and completely. What was it that would have been given to man in the middle of the Atlantean epoch if he had continued to be guided and directed until that time, instinctively, as it were, by divine spiritual beings? He would have received what, because of the intervention of the Luciferic influence was given to him later through the mystery of Golgotha. The Christ impulse would have been given to man at the middle of the Atlantean epoch. On account of the Luciferic influence, however, he had to wait for the Christ impulse as long a time as had elapsed between the intervention of the Luciferic influence and the middle of the Atlantean epoch, the span of time between the entrance of Lucifer and the middle of the Atlantean epoch was the same as that between the middle of the Atlantean time and the arrival of the Christ impulse. Thus, through man's having acquired a likeness to the gods before he was meant to do so, the Christ impulse was delayed. Before it could come, man had to go through the earth karma due to him because of the evil that had entered into him through the Luciferic influence. This had to be suffered through by man. He had to wait, not only until the Luciferic influence had rendered him able to distinguish between good and evil, but also until, in the course of the earth's development, all the consequences of the Luciferic influence had occurred. Then only could the Christ impulse descend to the earth. In accordance with the wise guidance of the earth, man was not intended to escape forever from what was to come to him through the Luciferic influence, but he would not have received it before the middle of the Atlantean epoch. In any case, it must have come, but it would certainly not have come in the same form. Not only did man acquire the power of free decision in everything connected with spiritual things from Lucifer, but also the capacity of enthusiasm for what is good and noble, wise and great. As human beings, we are not only able coldly to decide between good and evil, but also to feel a warm glow for the noble, good, and wise. This is because something was carried into our astral bodies that, if it had reached us in the middle of the Atlantean epoch, would have been taken into the ego that is capable of judgment. All feeling, idealism, and enthusiasm for what is good and for high ideals we owe to the circumstance that something entered our astral bodies before we had acquired the likeness to God in our egos, before the acceptance of the Christ had taken place therein. The essential point is that this likeness to God, the possibility of finding the good within ourselves, had to come to us. If the Luciferic influence had not come, this impulse would have come in the middle of the Atlantean period. But as things happened, it came in the age in which Christ Jesus himself worked. Thus, through the Christ impulse, man came consciously to know that in his ego he had something of divine substance and nature. The thought that man can take the divine into his ego being, and that this divine part can be active therein and decide between good and evil, underlies all the deeper passages of the New Testament. We may therefore say that with the introduction of the Christ impulse into the inner nature of man, it was made possible for him to say that he must be his own guide for the knowledge of his existence and decisions concerning good and evil. Now, if we look back to pre-Christian times, we must say that since the impulse enabling man to decide between good and evil was not yet present, such decisions and the judgment of man as to the good, the beautiful, and the true was necessarily meager. It did not actually proceed from his inner being, and he could not, before the Christ impulse, have distinguished between good and evil in his inner being. In pre-Christian times, decisions concerning the really good, beautiful, and true could only be accomplished through certain beings, such as the bodhisattvas, reaching up with a part of their being into the divine spiritual worlds. Decisions as to good and evil were therefore not made from man's inner being, but in the divine worlds. Through their companionship with divine spiritual beings, these leaders acquired decisions, and they flowed from them into the souls of men as though by suggestion. Had it not been for these leaders, men could have made only feeble decisions concerning good and evil. But if these leaders had depended on their own hearts alone, they could not have accomplished this transfer of decisions either. Because they descended into those depths of soul that were not yet accessible to man, entering through their ego beings into the kingdom of heaven, they received the impulse needed by man to help him to decide between good and evil, so that the good might be implanted in the earth by way of preparation. Thus, before the time of Christ, man was a being still insufficiently prepared to acquire the likeness of God. On this account, everything done by man after the Lemurian epoch was done less well than would otherwise have been the case. This applies above all to himself, his astral, etheric, and physical bodies, which but for the luciferic impulse would have remained more spiritual, were less well formed through that influence and made more material. Here was the reason for all the evil that developed in the life of man as time went on. These evils had developed in the course of an extremely long time, from the Lemurian epoch to the mystery of Golgotha, in the physical, etheric, and astral bodies. In the astral body, a high degree of egotism has developed. The possibility of mistaken judgment and the possibility of lying has developed in the etheric body. If man had remained under the influence of divine spiritual beings, acting instinctively in accord with their impulses, he would not today, when he desires knowledge of the world around him, be able to fall into error, nor could he be led into untruth. Thus did the tendency to lying and the danger of error find place in the development of man. Since the spiritual is always the origin of the physical, and because the luciferic influence and its consequences gradually ate their way deeper into the etheric body from incarnation to incarnation, the possibility of disease entered the physical body. Illness is the evil that entered the physical body through that development. Something of still greater significance, however, has come. If man had not been subject to these influences, if he had not allowed them to work upon him, he would never have supposed that anything more than a change of life takes place when the physical body falls away from him. Consciousness of death would not have come to him. If man had descended less deeply into matter, and had kept hold of the threads uniting him with the divine spiritual, he would have been aware that when the physical sheath is laid aside, a new existence begins. He would never have looked upon that as a loss, however, nor as the end of an existence he had grown fond of. Everything in evolution would have taken a different aspect. Man descended more deeply into matter. He thus made himself freer and more independent, but he thereby also made his own development more limited than it would have been. Everything lacking in man will be made good by the Christ impulse, but one must not expect that to be accomplished in a short, nor even a comparatively short time. A long time elapsed between the Lemurian epoch and the mystery of Golgotha. Slowly and gradually, during incarnation after incarnation, came egotism, error, and lying, disease, and the realization of death. Man is being led back into the spiritual world with the qualities he has acquired from below, so to speak. The re-ascent will progress faster than the descent. It cannot be expected, however, that man will be enabled in one or two incarnations, through what he can take in of the Christ impulse, to overcome selfishness and to heal his etheric body to such an extent that all danger of lying and error will end. Still less can he be expected to be able to work healingly on his physical body. All this must proceed slowly and gradually, but it is going on. Just as man has been led down into these qualities by the luciferic impulse, so will he be led up out of them by the Christ impulse. Selfishness will be transmuted into selflessness, lying into truthfulness, the danger of error into absolute certainty and true judgment. Illness will become the foundation for more complete health. The illnesses he has overcome will form the seeds of greater good health. When he has learned gradually to understand death in such a way that the death at Golgotha works as a prototype of death in his own soul, death will then have lost its fearsomeness. Man will know why he must lay aside his physical sheath from time to time in order to rise ever higher in the course of his embodiments. In particular, the Christ impulse brought with it the impulse to make good something that is connected with man's knowledge and observation of the world. We have said that man has become more entangled in matter, less perfect in his three bodies than he would have been if there had been no luciferic influence. This caused him to be possessed by an urge to sink more deeply into material existence, to soak himself more completely in mere matter. This refers especially to his knowledge, but even this came about slowly and gradually. Man did not, as soon as the luciferic influence made itself felt, immediately sink down so deeply as to close all the doors into the spiritual world behind him. For a long time he still remained in connection with the spiritual world from which he had emerged and with which he would have remained completely connected if the luciferic influence had not come. He long remained a participator in it, and he continued to feel that his finer, more spiritual instincts were guided by the threads from the divine spiritual world. For a long time he continued to act as though his impulse was not a merely human one, but it was as though the gods were at work behind it. This was more particularly the case in most ancient times. Man was driven slowly into matter, and he thus gradually lost his consciousness of the divine. The spiritual movements and world conceptions that had knowledge of these things have also hinted at man's descent into matter. They said that there was once an age in which man was driven into material existence by the luciferic influence, though not so far as to prevent the divine influence from still having a powerful effect upon him. In the early ages of man's development, this was known as the Golden Age. This is no fanciful conception. Golden Age is simply the expression used by those men of ancient times who still retained an inkling of a primeval age of humanity, just described. This Golden Age, known to Eastern philosophy as Krita Yuga, lasted, comparatively speaking, much longer than the ages we still have to describe. After the Golden Age came the so-called Silver Age. Slowly and gradually, man was pushed farther down into the physical world. Even then, the doors of the spiritual world were not yet completely closed. Man still had intense moments in which, in a dreamy sort of clairvoyance, he saw the gods at work behind his instincts. He could no longer be called a companion of the gods in this Silver Age, but he could still perceive them standing behind him. Eastern philosophy calls this age Treta Yuga. Then came an age that extends into our own post-Atlantean period. Its last stragglers are to be found in historical times, in those people who were still gifted with the old dreamlike, twilight clairvoyance. The consciousness of a spiritual world from which man had come forth still existed in them, though only as a kind of memory retained from former incarnations. It was just as when we now remember our own childhood, our youth, and our present age. In childhood we had direct experience of our childish happenings. In like manner, man still experienced the impulse of the divine spiritual world in a direct way in Treta Yuga. In the following age, known as the Bronze Age, man had something more like a memory. It might be compared with the way a grown man contemplates his childhood, saying, "I experienced my childhood. It was not a dream." Such was the state of things in the Third Age. Men then knew that they had communed with the gods in earlier ages, but that now it was nothing but a memory. I have explained at some length how in the ancient Indian period of civilization, the memory of the Atlantean epoch worked retrospectively, thus enabling the holy rishis to reveal their great divine teachings. This Bronze Age is known in Eastern philosophy as Dvapara Yuga. The Bronze Age is followed by an age in which all memory of the divine spiritual world is lost, when man, with his knowledge and perception, is entirely given up to the physical world. This age began about the year 3101 BC. In Eastern philosophy, it is known as Kali Yuga, the Dark Age, because man had then lost all connection with the spiritual world and had become completely one with the physical world. I wish expressly to note that I am now using these expressions for smaller divisions of time, but they can also be applied to larger spans. We are now speaking of the divisions of time corresponding to the smaller ages, and we make Kali Yuga begin, as does Indian philosophy, with the year 3101 BC. So, an age was prepared at that time, in which men could be taught to see only what conceals the divine spiritual world as by a veil or covering, and they would perceive only the external physical. At the beginning of Kali Yuga, there were still many men who could either see or recollect the divine spiritual world, but for average humanity, the time came when they could see nothing but the physical world of nature. Such was the descent of man into Kali Yuga. It was the time of deepest descent into the material world, and into it the impulse for re-ascending had to be introduced. That is why the Christ impulse had to come during Kali Yuga, the Dark Age. The coming of the Christ impulse was prepared for by the religion of Yahweh or Jehovah, in that this religion taught man how little reliance could be placed on his former decisions. During the time extending from the old Lemurian epoch to the revelation on Mount Sinai, man was given the power to choose good or evil, while at the same time he became liable to err in judging between them. He also became more likely to bring sin to the earth. Sin then ate its way into the life on earth. Man acquired a likeness to God, but he used it for qualities that were in no way ripe for the likeness to God. What then had to happen? First, man had to be shown what the God had expected from him, if he was to become a self-conscious ego. This was revealed to him in the announcement made on Mount Sinai in the Ten Commandments. The people heard it proclaimed through Moses, "What you have developed up to now, concerning good and evil, is deficient. I will show you how these commandments should sound if you had not descended, and in return for your defective qualities, you had received the power of judging between good and evil." The Decalogue, the law given to man on Sinai, was directed to him as he had then become, so that out of the spiritual worlds he heard sounding forth what was right in contrast to what he had insufficiently developed. The Ten Commandments stand forth as a law of iron, as a torch, showing man what he had not become. He had to submit himself to that law with all he had. Man could not have given the Ten Commandments to himself, because he was lacking in decision and in self-guidance. Therefore, they had to be given to him by one who was inspired, Moses, which is to say, they were given him from above by divine inspiration, and in such a way that they were intended for his ego. They told man how an ego must act if it is to attain the goal of humanity. In the lecture on the Ten Commandments of Moses, given on November 16, 1908, what I have just said is traced out in detail. Therein is first shown the right attitude of the ego to the spiritual world. This is contained in the first three commandments. The next few refer to man's conduct toward his fellow men in act and deed, and the last refer to the control of his feelings and sensations. The Ten Commandments give instructions for the education of the ego, and were the preparation by means of which the ego was to learn in its most inward being how to give itself the necessary impulse to proceed after having descended into Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. At first man was to be given the law from above. The law of one's own ego, however, could become what it was to be only when it took into itself the great prototype of Golgotha, saying, "If I take into my soul such thinking as was thought by the being who offered himself in sacrifice on Golgotha, if I take into myself such feelings as were felt by the being who offered himself as sacrifice on Golgotha, if I take into myself such willing as was willed by the being who offered himself in sacrifice on Golgotha, then will my being come to a decision within itself to develop increasingly a likeness to God. It will no longer have to follow the outer law, the Ten Commandments, but an inner impulse, its own law." Thus Moses first put the law before mankind, but Christ gave man the prototype and the strength that the soul ought to take in to develop itself. Hence all spiritual impulses were to be taken into the innermost part of the soul, even into the ego itself. They were to be deepened into inwardness through Christ Jesus. This could occur only if, with Christ radiating it forth as an impulse, men thought as follows. Man has descended into the Dark Age, into Kali Yuga. Before Kali Yuga, men saw into the spiritual world with a dim twilight consciousness. They were then able not merely to make use of the instruments of the physical body, but when they observed the physical world through their senses, they perceived the spiritual surrounding all things. Men were rich in those days in this observation of the spiritual. In ancient times the spirit was bestowed on them, whereas they were reduced to beggary in spirit. In the Dark Age they had become poor in spirit. Kali Yuga gradually came upon them, that time when men had to say to themselves that in the old days, when the spirit was bestowed on men, things were different. They were able to look up into a spiritual world and were then rich in spirit. The kingdoms of heaven were then accessible to them. But in the Dark Age, men were pressed down into the physical world. The gates of the spiritual world and the kingdoms of heaven were closed to the physical senses. Christ, however, was able to say, "Lay hold of the ego where it must now be apprehended. Then will the kingdom of heaven draw near to you. They will arise within your own ego. Though the spiritual light may be concealed from your eyes, behind the external light that is perceptible to the senses, though spiritual sound may be concealed from your ears behind physical sound, yet when you raise yourselves to the Christ, you shall find the kingdoms of heaven within you." Those who had become poor in the Dark Age, who had become beggars regarding the spirit, now became blessed. The impulse was given through which Christ was able, from the spiritual world, from the kingdoms of heaven, to penetrate into the very ego, or I, capital, of man. Therefore, with respect to man's poverty of spirit, the highest Christian proclamation is this: from now on, blessed are they who are beggars in spirit, who no longer receive the spirit bestowed upon them according to the old conception. Henceforth they can be blessed if they take in the Christ impulse. Through developing their egos, the kingdoms of heaven will be within them. Let us continue on to the etheric body, which is the builder of the physical body. What has entered that? Illness expresses itself only in the physical body. The trouble itself is first in the etheric body. It then expresses itself in a subsequent incarnation as illness in the physical body. Quote, "Now, however, something has entered the world," unquote, so Christ Jesus had to say, quote, "whereby an impulse may arise within that will gradually clear away the affliction from the etheric body. Blessed may those who have an affliction connected with their etheric bodies now be, if they take up the Christ impulse. They will have something within them that lifts them above suffering and teaches them to find inner comfort, the inner paraclete or comforter." Now, what did the astral body become through the luciferic influence? It had become less perfect. It had been given the possibility that we have described as a good quality of being able to be aglow for what is great and good, to feel enthusiasm for the sublime treasures of the true, the beautiful, and the good. It also had to purchase this at the price of feeling sympathy or antipathy for the treasures of the earth. A man who takes up the Christ impulse, however, learns to control his astral body, which stirs his physical body to emotions concerning earthly treasures. He learns to bring it under the power of the Spirit, and in so doing he becomes happy or blessed. Blessed will he be who brings equanimity to his astral body concerning the things of the earth that fall to his share, when he is all afire for earthly things, feeling emotionally both sympathy and antipathy for them, he casts away what they might become to him. When, however, his astral body is brought under the power of the spiritual, and he becomes indifferent to earthly things, the kingdom of earth is added as a reward. Let us now ascend to what works as sentient soul in the astral body. Herein we still possess in a dim sort of way a ruling ego, an ego that has not yet wholly emerged and hence is still developing the most egotistical passions. As long as the ego is still really within the sentient soul, it develops the most selfish egoism. The wish that others should fare as well as we is lacking. Egoism dims the feeling of justice because the ego wants everything for itself. When the ego transmutes itself in imitation of the Christ impulse, however, it will desire justice for everyone around it. Blessed will be those who hunger and thirst for the feeling of justice in their sentient souls, for they shall be satisfied. They will be able to bring about conditions throughout the world that will correspond with a proper new spirit of justice to be found in the depths of the soul. Let us ascend further to the intellectual soul. This principle brings about the consideration of one man for another to a still greater extent, not merely as a feeling of justice, such as is produced by the sentient soul, but as compassion, a true compassion for the sorrows of others and a sharing in their joy. One who takes in the Christ impulse is not limited to his own feelings, but he also grows to feel those of others. He immerses himself in the egos of others, and in so doing feels bliss in his intellectual soul. Blessed is he who develops fellow feeling. Only by feeling himself within the souls of others does he stimulate them to feel themselves in him. He will receive the sympathy of others when he radiates fellow feeling for them. Blessed are those who feel with others, for others shall feel with them. Having gone a little further in our study of these connections, you will now see how we are able to understand in a different way, and from the very depths of the nature and being of man, those words in St. Matthew's Gospel known as the Sermon on the Mount. Each sentence of the Sermon on the Mount relates to one of the nine principles of man. In the next lectures, we will go further into this. The Sermon on the Mount must become transparent to our spiritual eyes, as that deed of Christ Jesus, by means of which he turned what was contained in the old law of Moses into something quite inward, an inner impulse, enabling man's ego to become active, as it must in all nine principles of man. Thus, if the ego takes up the Christ impulse, it affects all of these. Here we see the profound truth of what I have already indicated once before, that in Kali Yuga Christ made the ego of man capable of discovering something in the physical world that can lead him up into the spiritual world, into the kingdoms of heaven. Christ has made the ego a participator in the spiritual world. On ancient Saturn, the physical body was taken straight out of the spiritual world. It was still within that world because it was at that time much more spiritual than now, and thus unaware that it could separate from the spiritual worlds. The etheric body was added on the sun and the astral body on the moon, but only on earth was it made possible, through the development of the ego, to set oneself free from the divine spiritual. In consequence, as the ego must be led back to the spiritual again, God had to descend to the physical plane to show man how to find his way back to the kingdoms of heaven. A most important event was brought about through the Christ impulse. Just ask yourselves whether all those living at the time Christ Jesus worked on earth knew that such an important event was taking place. Just reflect that Tacitus, the great historian, mentions the Christians as an almost unknown sect. 100 years after Christ, he mentions them as a sect living in a side street in Rome, and that their teacher was a certain Jesus. They are simply mentioned as living there. For a long time after the Christ event, many people in Rome believed Jesus to be a contemporary of theirs, as though he had only just appeared. In short, important events can take place in evolution without people noticing at the time that anything has happened. The most important things may come about and pass unobserved if people do not cultivate an understanding for them, in which case those who have missed the experiences will be left lacking. Change your hearts, the kingdoms of heaven have approached. That was the proclamation of John the Baptist and of Christ Jesus himself. They hinted to those who had ears to hear that something most important was happening. That nothing is known in the world of an important occurrence is no proof that it does not take place. Those whose business it is today to point out the signs of the times, however, are aware of what is taking place. They must point to an occurrence that is important, even though not one of the most cogent. It is true that in our own time something of infinite significance is developing, just as John pointed to Christ, and Christ pointed to the approach of the kingdoms of heaven, to the ego. So must we today point to another important event. Christ descended once to the earth in a physical body. He spent the first years of our era on earth, in the flesh. In accordance with the wise guidance of our world evolution, it is not ordained that men should again see Christ in the flesh as a physically incarnated man, nor is it necessary that they should. Christ will not return in the flesh. Nevertheless, we must speak of a new relationship of man to Christ. Why? Because what we call the Dark Age, the Kali Yuga, was completed at the end of the 19th century, and a new age began with the 20th, in which men must prepare to develop new capacities, those faculties that were lost in the Dark Age. They are being prepared slowly and gradually. They will develop so far that single individuals will be here who will possess them as natural qualities. They will be seen in a certain number of persons, particularly between the years of 1930 and 1940, and by these means these persons will enter into a new relation with the Christ. The appearance of these faculties indicates an important point in human development. Spiritual science is here to open the understanding of men to these new faculties that will be developed in the world of men. Anthroposophy has not come into the world simply because a few people are in sympathy with it and would like to make it more widely known. It has come because if people wish to understand what will take place in the first half of this century, it will be needed. It is only by means of what spiritual science can give mankind that it will become capable of understanding this. When people become capable of perceiving in the spirit what will then occur, they will also be incapable of confusing that event with mistaken representations. As materialism spreads further, it will extend even to the spiritual conceptions of the world, where it will have a particularly evil influence. In that realm, it might tend to prevent men from understanding what should be spiritually comprehended. What should really be grasped in the spirit, they will seek in the world of matter. Because we are here to enter into a new relation to Christ in the course of the first half of this century, it must be repeatedly emphasized during the next decades and until the event occurs that false messiahs, false Christs, will arise who will knock at the doors of those who are only able to be materialists in the realms of spiritual science and who can imagine a new relation to Christ only if they see him before them in the flesh. A number of false messiahs will turn this to their own use, saying, Christ has reappeared in the flesh. Anthroposophical wisdom has the duty of preparing this relationship with the Christ that can be attained during the first half of our century by purely human capacities. The responsibility of the anthroposophical effort becomes ever greater because it has to prepare for a coming event that will be understood if anthroposophy makes its way into the souls of men and thus becomes fruitful for the further development of humanity. The alternative is that men will neglect to accept and make use of the instrument of spiritual science through which this event can be understood. Then it will pass humanity by, uncomprehended. If men so entirely reject spiritual science that nothing of it should remain, they will either not know that the event has occurred, or they will interpret it wrongly. The fruit of this event would then be lost to the future of humanity, and man would be thrust down into dreadful misery. I have thus hinted at a new relation to the Christ that is germinating in the souls of men, and that they will be able to develop in a comparatively near future. The end of Lecture 3.